all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Army Captain Sean Parnell. Sean, welcome to Veterans Radio.
It is great to be here. Thank you guys for making time for me.
Well, we're glad to do it. We're glad to get a couple of the messages out that you are talking about at this time. A number of people may recall your name and say, where do I know Sean Parnell from? Sean wrote, and it was published in 2012, Outlaw Platoon, about his time with the Army Rangers in the Pakistan-Afghanistan borders. Sean, how did a nice kid from Pittsburgh end up in the Army?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't like, I don't have military blood, you know. My family, I didn't come from a long line of generals. I was just I was a sophomore in college, an elementary education major when 9/11 happened. And I remember watching first responders, police officers, firefighters, regular Americans run into the fires when I thought every bone in their bodies should be focused on getting the heck out of there. I watched them run in, and I just thought, you know, their selflessness and bravery inspired me to try to serve something greater than myself, you know. And I joined the military because I wanted to be a part of, you know, America's collective response and going after the people that attacked us. And it was all because I was inspired by the bravery of just ordinary Americans that day, who, in my opinion, became extraordinary. And because they were trying to save, in many cases, people that they didn't even know. So that led me into the military, and I told every recruiter or every person that I came into contact with that I wanted to go to airborne school, and then I wanted to go to Ranger school and be in the infantry and on the front lines, and eventually I got what I wanted.
Well, and they said, okay, he keeps telling us that. We're going to send him over there for over a year.
That's exactly what happened.
And so tell us a little bit about your activities in Afghanistan in the 2006 period that led to the writing of Outlaw Platoon.
Well, we knew when I got to my unit as a newly minted second lieutenant, and those people that are familiar with the military and the rank structure know that second lieutenants don't really know anything. One of the few things that I did know is that my unit was going to Afghanistan, but that's really about it. Intelligence from the front lines was pretty scarce. And so, you know, we did everything we could to train, and then we went over there, and oh my gosh, it was just hell. This was back in 2006 when the eyes of the nation were really focused on Iraq and the debate for the surge was raging. Do you remember that? And so
we all did.
It was just, yeah, yeah. And so we got to Afghanistan and we were not fighting farmers with pitchforks. I mean, these guys were tough. I mean, they brought the fight and they brought it to us every day. And we were supposed to only be there for a year. But we ended up being there for 485 days because we were extended the day before we were supposed to come home. Now get this. Like, I was, myself and my platoon sergeant were the only people left on our base. Everybody else from all of my soldiers were in various stages of redeployment on the way home. Some of my guys were even home. We get extended, and those guys that were already home had MPs show up at their door and walk them back to the flight line so they could fly back to Afghanistan and get in the fight. It was just the craziest thing in the world to be a part of. And then we got our orders and it said, you know, 485 days or until mission complete. So of course, every private that we have in our platoon thinks we're going to be there for 2 years. I mean, it was a legitimate morale issue. And so I think during that year and a half time, and we took something like 85% casualties, everybody that manned a machine gun in my platoon had taken a bullet to the head. All of them miraculously survived. You know, those helmets that they have you wear are pretty amazing, you know. But we just went through a year and a half of hell, and then we all tried to come home from it. you know? And I just thought to myself, you know, guys would come back from the war, and Americans, always so grateful and thankful for their military, would be like, oh, thank you so much for your service. Where are you coming? Where are you coming home from? Oh, from Afghanistan? Oh, wow. Well, thank God you're there, because Iraq is just so bad and so dangerous. And but because it just got, it just, it really like hurt the morale of my soldiers, because they're thinking, oh my gosh, like no one even knows what we're doing. Like I just got shot in the head last week. You know, the Americans have no idea what's going on over here. And so I just thought it was my responsibility as their platoon leader to try to capture that story and make sure Americans knew what they went through, which is how we, which is why Outlaw Platoon, how it happened in the first place. So
well,
it was for them,
it was
their book.
Yeah, it was really appreciated by the nation, I think, and certainly became a New York Times bestseller. And I think it, you know, drilled home for a lot of people how, you know, this was a major battlefront going on over there. I think I saw that over 350 enemy fighters were killed in some of the what really was some of the biggest firefights of the Afghan war. So there really were stories to be told that had not been told by the general press. But as you say, your guys all came home, certainly scrapes and injuries, physical and mental. I did want to turn a little to the health, mental health issues that arose, because that was something you became particularly focused on and went back to school in to better, maybe better serve. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, I got back from the war, and I just thought to myself, how can I continue serving? How can I stay in the fight? I was medically retired. I got wounded in Afghanistan, and it took me a couple of years, but ended up being medically retired. But I just thought that it was really important to me to still have a mission that was bigger than myself, you know? And I think to a large extent, a lot of guys, when they get out, they don't have a mission. So they can languish and they can struggle and they survive, but they don't thrive, you know? And so for me, it was really important to have that mission. And what I settled on was just trying to get my PhD, in clinical psychology so that I could help guys coming back from war, you know? And I didn't stay in the whole time. I ended up leaving with my master's because I wrote Outlaw Platoon while I was in grad school. And eventually just chose to, it was like one of the hardest decisions of my life, but chose to, pursue writing full time, but helping, people that come home from war, has always been something that it's been really important to me, you know, because I think a lot of guys struggle with coming home from war. And I think, you know, the way that we help those people, our veterans, can be better, because I think, you know, it's less a clinical issue and more one that has to do with society in general, you know. And when you have such a small percentage of Americans volunteering to serve the country during the longest period of war in our nation's history, guys come home and they feel like exiles in their own country, because very few people can identify with what they went through. You know, if you came back from World War II, you'd be hard pressed to go back into a neighborhood where someone's family wasn't serving. Even if you didn't have the opportunity to deploy, you were still fully involved in the war effort. So there was a shared burden by the nation, during World War II. But that percentage of people that has served has gone down significantly. And so now it's 0.4%. So when guys come home, hardly anybody knows what they went through. And so I think that's where a lot of the isolation and loneliness comes from, because most guys come back and they get isolated from their unit, their sense of collective identity, the people that they fought and bled with. And, you know, I mean, I always explain it to people like this. You know, the military trains you to shoot, move, and communicate together as a team, and then you go to combat and fight, bleed, and die together as a team. And then you come home and everybody goes their separate ways. That's just how the Army works. And so when that happens, I think it's hugely detrimental to guys that serve, guys and gals that serve.
Well, you've, I think, identified one of those pearls of wisdom why we do these interviews with our veteran brothers like yourself. When you say you had to personally find a mission bigger than yourself, was that something you, when you got medically discharged, you said, I know that's what I got to find? Or did it take you both practical experience and educational experience, or just maybe some dumb luck, to go, that's my creed right there. I have to have a mission bigger than myself?
Yeah, probably a little of everything. You know, I was reading a lot of books, particularly Jonathan Shea, you know, Achilles in Vietnam and Odysseus in America. And like, they're really about the existential plight of veterans as they cut the journey home from war, right? As like a battle drill in it of itself, you know, and one that has existed since the beginning of time. It's not something that has been just an issue, in America. It's something that's been an issue forever. And so it just always really interested me, you know, because being a warrior is one of those professions that's been around in every society, regardless of language or geographic location. It's been around forever since human beings started walking the earth. The warrior as a profession existed. So there had to be some collective wisdom, you know, jotted down in the pages somewhere about it. And I was just always interested in that journey home. And so as I got smarter on what that journey might be like, Jonathan Shea's big thing, who he's made a career working with post-traumatic stress disorder and combat veterans. And so one of his big things is, you know, having a mission, something to serve that's greater than yourself, to focus on when you get out, and staying and making sure that you stay in the service of others is also important. So I thought that the best way to do that initially was to go back to school and help veterans suffering from PTSD. But what I realized, and I made the right decision focusing on the book, because now I can use that platform that book has given me to help large amounts of veterans. And I feel like that's really what we're doing now.
Did this kid from Pittsburgh who became a captain in the Army of Rangers actually think he could write a best-selling book?
No, I still don't think I can. I'm not, that's the thing. I'm not that great of a writer. There are people out there that are way, way better than me. It's just, you know, I feel like without Lopatoon, a little bit, probably a God thing, a little bit of luck. I don't know. That book came out in February of 2012. And if you know anything about the literary world, you know, after Christmas, not yet the summer, people aren't exactly, you know, running to Barnes and Noble or going to Amazon to buy books in February. I don't know. But somehow Outlaw Platoon, if you remember, you probably remember, do you remember when the, that American soldier got in trouble for throwing the Quran in the fire?
Sure.
That was back in 2012. Well, that happened the week my book went on sale. And so I was the new Afghan veteran that had a book out, and so I was getting booked by people. So the media helped me a lot get the story out there, and it hit the bestseller list in the first week on sale, and then I think in its first year was on the bestseller list for like 28 weeks, which is ridiculous.
One of the things, though, I don't want to gloss over this, and I don't want to scare people off with that success, if you will. But going into that project was a huge risk and time sink. But you were willing to take the risk. Was that part of this idea that I'm taking on this risk for the larger good?
Yes. You know, absolutely. Like, publishing that book was one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do. It is so challenging, and it's not physically challenging like something like Ranger School or combat, right? It's just stupid challenging. It's just like nothing makes sense. Like, you have to write a query letter and get an agent. Everything is about convincing other people that your story has merit, you know, but there are 1,000 other people trying to do the same thing. And so how do you, it's just like, it was so challenging. And I think my own agent rejected me 4 or 5 times, but it just was about, for me, knocking on that door, so often and so hard that my knuckles were bleeding by the time it was done. You know,
again, one of those skill sets you learn in the military, right? So this is
this applies
not only to Sean Parnell, author, but it applies to every vet out there who's trying to move up, damn wall down.
That's so true. You're so right, and it's just that's what the military teaches us to do. At some point, I don't care if you're in the Air Force or the Army, at some point you're getting the chance to kick down a door somewhere, you know? And so much about being successful in life is how you have to be able to do that in everything. You're going to face, believe me, my own father, who I love dearly, we had a great relationship growing up. He's a great dad. But even he was like, you know, Sean, you're really up against it with this book thing. Like, you might have to consider doing, you know, self-publishing or whatever. And by the way, there's nothing wrong with that. But I was just like, hell no, I'm not doing it. I had my sights set on getting the book published. And, you know, it ended up being successful, I think, primarily because I was not willing to accept no for an answer. And so many guys I've met particularly a lot of veterans who want to write a book about their story. They're told no, or they're told their story isn't good enough, or that it's been done, and they're not willing to pursue it further than that, or they're not willing to slightly adjust their story from an editorial standpoint to make it feel different, right? They're just not willing to, and I hate to say it, but they're just not willing to do the work. It's just not important enough to them, you know? And it has to be that important if you're willing to do it. And writing Outlaw Platoon, I've said it since day one, it was for my soldiers, and there was no way in hell I was going to fail them.
It's a dozen years later now, and since those deployments, and the book, those experiences in the book have allowed you to kind of focus on some additional issues that I want to make sure we talk about before we get to your most recent, actually your first novel called Man of War,
yes,
and published by William Morrow, and we'll get there. But I want you to talk a little bit about the American Warrior Initiative, what you're doing on suicide prevention and with service dogs. Because, again, I think we all learn a skill set of multitasking, but there's a thread to all of this. And I think the importance of that thread on this multitasking link is something I'd like to hear you talk about.
Well, yeah, so the American Warrior Initiative, when I came back, this was at a time where, you know, a very small percentage of people were, you know, carrying a very heavy burden, and that is multiple combat deployments. And it's still to a certain extent like that right now. I mean, there's still a war going on in Afghanistan. Guys are still coming home. Most Americans probably don't even realize it. And I just thought to myself, you know, I've got to come up with a way to help these guys, and it'll help these men and women really come home from war, you know? And I ended up meeting, it was just a God thing. Like I said, fate, luck, God, whatever you believe. I met this woman and this, that worked for a mortgage company. I met the CEO of this mortgage company, and we just got to talking one day, talking to them just like I'm talking to you now about my passion for helping the military. And the CEO looked at, this woman who is now my business partner, Louise Thaxton, and she's amazing. She's just like the most amazing businesswoman, and she's fiery and passionate and loves the military. Father was a Vietnam veteran. He just turned to her and said, just make it happen. And she came up with a program that started out small, but grew into the American Warrior Initiative, which is now a multi-million dollar veterans nonprofit that started out with making sure veterans got mortgage-free homes, but after time evolved into something of just like meeting the veterans where they are, because not everybody needs a home or is ready to own a home, you know? So, and where we've started to focus on now with the American Warrior Initiative is service dogs. It's just it's a dire need that the wait lists are unbelievably long, And service dogs have just a profound and real impact on helping veterans come home from war. And so that's where we've been focused.
And again, I think it's one of those things where sometimes vets hear, oh, maybe a service dog will help you, and go, ah, you know, it's not going to help me. But you've seen it help folks. I've seen it help folks. So if you're stuck out there and you don't know, you think maybe it's something I'd like to try, but I don't even know where to try, I would suggest you get on our friend Google and go ahead and look for American Warrior Initiative and run these leads down, because there's probably somebody out there that's willing to help if you're in need of a service dog. Absolutely.
I agree. Absolutely.
Sean, let me turn to, as we come to the back part of the interview here, as I said earlier, a bit jokingly, how did a nice kid from Pittsburgh think he could write a New York Times bestseller? But now, Captain Sean Parnell, you've written your first novel, Man of War. Tell us a little bit about this audacious undertaking.
Well, so I've been a voracious reader my entire life. I mean, I read a book a week as a kid, and I think that really helped me to fall in love with the craft of storytelling and writing today. But I love the thriller genre. I love Stephen King growing up. I love Harlan Coben now, and Brad Thorne, Vince Flynn, two of my favorites. And I've wanted my entire life to write a sort of military political thriller, and Man of War is like House of, you know, Jason Bourne meets House of Cards, right? So, but what I thought that the genre desperately needed was a hero that embodied what it meant to be an American warrior, you know, and embodied our warrior ethos, you know. And Eric Steele, who is the hero or the protagonist in my story, in my book, his character was inspired by the people that selflessly sacrificed themselves to try to save others on September 11th. And was inspired by the selfless acts that I saw my soldiers execute on the battlefield every single day. And, you know, Eric Steele is a good guy. He tries to save people, but oftentimes he's put in impossible situations, you know, where there's no good conclusion. Sometimes accomplishing the mission means hurting the people that you care about. But that's not unlike the fight that American soldiers have on the battlefield every single day, you know, where you're caught in an ambush and you're forced to kill, or, you know, you see your guys get hurt, and then the next day, you know, you're cradling a baby in a village somewhere. It's the same plight that we face every day.
So our friends here who listen to Veterans Radio know we don't do novels, really. But I actually, you know, obviously you're somebody whose career we wanted to talk about. But what I found interesting and feel compelled to recommend, A Man of War by Sean Parnell, I suspect it's going to be the first of an Eric Steele series, is that the character is, you know, confident, witty, resourceful, but flawed. It really comes, you know, you're going to see in this all the traits of guys you know, kind of all molded into one guy, but it certainly has that feels real to it. It also moves extremely fast, the writing does. So I think you've done a great first novel here, which will go on sale in the upcoming month, I believe, right?
Yes, it actually goes on sale September 11th in honor of the people that sacrificed themselves on that day. And so, you know, I appreciate you saying that. You know, writing fiction is hard work. I rewrote that story four times. It's a good book, but I think it could be better. And I think, you know, I hope that the next book, which I'm trying to finish up now, is better than the first. But I mean, it doesn't matter really what your trade is. That's the hope, right? That if you're dedicated to it, you get better every time. So I'm working hard on trying to finish book two in the Eric Steele saga, but it's still difficult. It's still hard to do. I still try to make it as good as possible.
Well, as you've gotten back into the civilian world and settled in through education and a new vocation of being a paid writer and author and speaker, again, those things a kid from Pittsburgh, and I suspect your three children.
I don't know.
Three children and wife can barely speak English. Yeah, they can't believe it either. Where do you view the country these days as it relates to its relationship with its military?
Well, I think America appreciates the military, and I think that the country itself and the civilian populace, while they support and thank the military often, I think they don't really know what it means to defend freedom. I think that, and by the way, this isn't a bad thing. I think this is just where we are, you know? Veterans don't talk a whole lot about their experience when they come home. They need to, but they don't. They're humble, and it's just not part of who we are. And Americans are afraid to ask because they don't want to dredge up potentially painful experiences. And so over the years, I think our country and our American society has gotten further and further away from those who protect and defend freedom on a day-to-day basis. And I think that that's an issue. And part of my mission has been to bridge that cultural gap by writing Outlaw Platoon, by writing mainstream fiction stories with characters who embody the warrior ethos, or by having nonprofits and working with companies that give back to the military. All of these things serve that greater mission that I have. And so I think so much about a veteran's ability to come home, really come home from war, is to find that mission, whatever it is for that specific person, and focus on it and run through walls for it and knock on those doors until your knuckles bleed, until you are successfully serving that mission. I think a lot of veterans have to learn that, like, our service and our combat experience, if you've been to war, they shape us. It's part of our identity for life. But you don't have to be stuck in it. It's okay to move on. Like, the war and the military will always be part of you. But in order for you to put anything behind you, you have to step past it, right? Like, you know, you've heard of the guy. There's always that one guy, you know, that went to high school who's still wearing his Letterman's jacket when he's 40. Sure. Is that normal?
Yeah.
No, it's not. So you have to learn to put experiences, whether they're positive or negative, behind you, while they'll always be a part of you. No doubt the war is always going to be a part of me. I think about it every single day of my life, but it's just part of me. It doesn't dominate me.
And I think that's also the message, Sean, I think you probably want to get out to people as we move up to National Suicide Prevention Week, which is September 9th through the 15th. And I know from the materials that your platoon has now lost more men to suicide than they did in combat. So
yep.
Would you like to wrap up maybe with a bit of a thought on suicide prevention?
Yeah. You know, Outlaw Platoon, we lost more people to suicide than we did in war, and that is unbelievable, and that's a tragedy. And so, you know, to Americans that are listening that have a loved one that served or just know somebody, talk to that person, get involved in their life, ask them about their service, check in with them. They're not victims of the war. You don't have to treat them like that. But, you know, just be there for them, talk to them, respect and understand their service. And if you're a veteran, you have to figure out ways to talk about your story and your service. You have to. I know it runs contrary to your DNA as a warrior, as being humble. But you have to figure out a way to tell people that you care about what you went through so they can help you so that they can help you carry that burden. You know, if they do that, it saves marriages. It'll keep families together, no doubt, because families would be more sensitive to like some of the hardships that our men and women have had to go through while serving. But ultimately, veterans that tell their story, I mean, it will save lives. Because your story will be out there, people will know about it, and they'll help you carry the burden. So tell it and tell it often.
Well, we want to thank you, Sean Parnell, for making some time to talk to us today.
And sharing your experience as an Army Ranger and as an author of Outlaw Platoon and the upcoming release of Manowar. And thanks for all that you're doing for our veterans around the nation.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be with you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.